to the Meeple Podcast. I'm Bill Price.
And I'm Hollis Biggs.
And we are the Meeple Podcast. And we are the podcast for beginning board gamers, or anyone trying to get into the hobby and is struggling with everything that that kind of goes into that, the terminology, the I like Monopoly and nobody else does. Why won't anybody play Exploding Kittens with me? We're going to get you past all that. So we left off. What did we leave off with last
time? We left off on kind of a cliffhanger, Bill. Not going to lie.
We did.
We left off on the cliffhanger of what does the hobby mean? So we had talked about a couple of ways to get into the hobby of board games and a lot of just games in general. But the thing we left off on was, what is kind of your top level here? How does a convention work? Because you've been to a number of board game conventions.
I have. Yes.
Over the years. So tell us about what it's kind of like. Are they just there to sell you new board games, or kind of what's the situation?
All right. Well, a board game convention, or I guess just a gaming convention, is just a large collection of hobbyists, of publishers, of retail places. You'll see some booths from that are some like online retailers. You'll also see independent designers. You'll see authors sometimes of like role-playing games, and maybe like they write Dungeons and Dragons adventures, smaller booths. But most likely, and you'll also see like people selling like dice, you know, like custom dice makers or board game bags or, you know, accessories, things like that. But most common are the publishers. So a lot of board game publishers come to these big conventions, and some, to an extent, the smaller ones as well. And they're kind of showing off, they have demo tables, you know, they're showing off what their new games are, sometimes what their old games are about, trying to revitalize interest. You can almost always buy copies of the games. They keep large stocks there. A lot of companies, a lot of especially small publishers, will actually do will sell most of the games they're going to sell will be at conventions. They might do some through distribution or something like that, but there are plenty of small publishers who really sell through their website or at conventions. And so that's kind of their way to make money. And there's almost year round, there's conventions. There's three big ones here in the United States. The biggest one is Gen Con, and that's in Indianapolis, not too far from us. And it's about 70,000 people last year. It's enormous. It is the biggest one in the United States. And then another one is Origins, which is, I believe, in Columbus, Ohio. Weirdly, board games in the Midwest are like a super thing.
Pretty central.
Yeah. And I want to say that's in the realm of like 20,000 to 30,000 people. Smaller, but still really big.
A lot of people in general, though.
Yeah, especially for a hobby that doesn't get as much exposure as board games.
It's kind of I would consider it kind of like a social event almost for...
Oh, for sure.
Trying to meet other people that are in the hobby.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's also... I just got done working at a convention that is... it's not open to the public. It's called GAMA, which is the Game Manufacturers Association of America. And it is primarily... I would call it probably the third largest, maybe. And it is primarily manufacturers, publishers, distributors. They don't really sell games there. It's more to get... retailers to come in and be like, oh, this looks like a fun game, publisher. I'll take 30 of them at distribution prices, which are insanely low. it's usually about 50% of the MSRP is what you typically find in distribution, but we're getting way off topic here.
Yeah. So if you're trying to get a game published, produced, you would go to something like that.
Yes. In fact, if you are a publisher, if you are a designer, if you are a manufacturer, if you are a retailer who sells, well, really anything, even if you are a content creator like we are, or a YouTube channel, you can join the Game Manufacturers Association.
Very neat.
So, yeah. So, if any of you out there ever thinking of designing a game or creating a YouTube channel to talk about your last session of Monopoly, then you too can be a Gamma member. But kind of getting back to conventions, one of the coolest things about conventions is not just, I sort of talked about the exhibit hall, mm-hmm. Which is where all the booths are. You know, it's like any standard convention. You go around, you talk to people, you buy games, you demo stuff, that kind of thing. But that's only a very small part of a board game convention, or really a game convention in general. And a lot of it is there's free gaming. So there's large areas with tables and games that are there that people can play. There are a ton of demo booths, not even booths, demo tables that you can go out and you can kind of schedule, like, hey, on Thursday at 6 p.m., you know, in this particular room, I'm going to play, you know, Wasteland Express or whatever. And everybody signs up and they get a ticket for it and you know, you play it. So there's open gaming, there's pre-scheduled games. There are other breakout rooms like upcoming games that publishers will be like, you know, new and exciting stuff. Like what just hit the market, what's about to hit the market, new announcements. There's like an independent designer's room that you can get a table at and visit and kind of see what some of the indie producers are doing. The cool thing about this hobby is that it's not just Hasbro and, you know, Milton Bradley and what have you. It's not all these big board gamers. We have big board game producers like Cool Mini or Not, which is CMON Games, or Fantasy Flight, things like that. But we also have a ton of really, really small, like, I'm talking one-man operations of a small card game that might sell 2,000 copies. But they're a publisher, and they've got a booth, and they're selling their 2,000 card games there, and that may be all they ever sell. Publishers go kind of in and out of business in this. It's unless you're moving a lot of quantity, this is not a very lucrative business to be in, especially given how many thousands of new board games are coming out now. It's very easy to get lost in the shuffle. But that's one of the cool things about Gen Con and these other conventions is that you can see and meet those people, and you can develop those contacts and this, hey, you know, I really loved this tiny little card game that you guys made, and, you know, I want to be on your mailing list. And wouldn't you know it, next year they come out with an even better card game, and now you know about it. But you'd have never known about it otherwise, because it's not going to be all over YouTube. It's not going to be in Walmart. It's not going to be, you know, probably even at your local game shop. So it's a neat way to see, to really get involved in the community and to meet people. And they're so much fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like, also, again, like you said, a really great way to meet people that are also in the hobby. Would you consider it to be, I know this isn't a real word, but a less like gatekeepy environment than sometimes maybe like Reddit forums are, or?
Yes, very much so.
No shade to the Reddit forums. It could be a little caustic at times, but, you know, we want to make sure everyone is
right.
has a nice introduction into the hobby if we can help it.
Well, you know, this isn't a newsflash here, but people do tend to be nicer to your face than they do behind a keyboard.
Definitely fair.
So, it definitely, if you go to, there's still some because there's all kinds of people that go to these conventions. You have like people who have been so immersed in this hobby for so many years that like just the thought of not playing some new heavy miniatures based war game, everything else is trash. And if you're like, hey, I really like Seven Wonders Architects and Splendor, somebody, sure, could look at you like you are beneath them. But I find that to be more and more rare. I think that people are starting to understand that the hobby is not in the same place it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it was there were 10, 15 years ago, there were a lot fewer games, and the people in the industry were a lot more tight-knit, I think, and they were more gatekeepy. They were more, oh, you're not, you wouldn't understand. You're not one of us. But then I think as gaming, board gaming, expanded and became more accessible and it became, more noticeable and people started getting into the hobby, publishers started making money and more games started coming out and more people started, you know, showing interest in things, and publishers started to look at the board game hobby less as this is our own little private hobby and more of, hey, I have a product that customers want. And so now instead of, oh, you're not good enough to play my game, it's, hey, how can I make this more accessible for you? How can I bring you in? How can I answer your questions? How can I show you how to play this? How can I, you know, help bring you, make you a loyal customer? They've started understanding that board gaming is kind of like any other commodity. There's competition and it is a service. And it is a product, and it is something that that they're trying to sell.
Definitely.
And so I think you are seeing less of that.
All right.
And plus, when you toss in so many new people, their natural inclination is not to immediately become curmudgeons. You know, that takes years and years of isolation to do. So, see, I think it is as welcoming now as it's ever been and is getting more so. But some of us, like, we don't know, as the reason for this podcast, we don't know what we didn't know at the time. And so it's hard for me to sometimes realize when I'm explaining something that, oh, when I tell you this is the same bidding mechanism as Furnace, you have no idea what I mean. And that's a me problem. That's not a you problem.
That's all right. That's why I am here to learn right along with our listeners. So it's a great reason for this podcast.
Absolutely. I think, I think this is going to be great. And in case anybody is wondering, if you are listening to this and you are a pretty experienced board gamer and you're listening to this going, well, I know what all this stuff is already. Maybe it's a good idea to recommend us to somebody that you are thinking of trying to get into the hobby. Maybe somebody who, a spouse or a friend who you've sat down and played, you know, a party game with. Maybe you brought Just One or Soul Clover to their house one time and they're like, this was kind of fun. This might be a great way to get them comfortable with more of the terminology and kind of nudge them into the hobby rather than have the way that I get people in a hobby, which is just badgering them until they play with me. I've done to everyone.
Listen, we got to start somewhere. And maybe it's by force, but that's okay.
Yes.
So speaking of terminology here, Bill, what are some terms that I might need to know, not necessarily before I start playing board games, but like to determining what I like, you know, how would you categorize some of the board games?
We go over a couple different sort of broad definitions. I know as more episodes come out, we're going to talk more and more about specific mechanisms that board games share. But I think some of the basics, we talked about family games and family weight games. We talked about, to an extent, gateway games, mm-hmm. which are kind of a step above the family weight game. Grandma may not want to play a true gateway game. It is a stepping stone into modern board game mechanisms. But somebody who has, you know, somebody who likes Exploding Kittens, or somebody who's played Five Crowns, or somebody even who, you know, is a Pinochle champion, and just wondering kind of what else is out there, gateway game would be a good way for them to kind of explore whether or not going beyond that is even something they want to do. Past that, or even before that, kind of in a weird category on its own, you'll hear people talk about party games. And I know right off the bat, it'd be, well, what's the difference between a party game and a family game? Like, I play party games with my family, right?
It's a great question.
Right? So, typically party games kind of fall into their own category. They could be family weight as far as the rules go. Party games are usually very quick to explain, very easy to explain, low rules overhead, but are typically designed for larger groups. Think 5, 6, 7, 8 people. I would take a party game. I have taken a party game when I know there's going to be 6 or 7 of us at the brewery, right?
Sure.
And typically with regular family games or with gateway games or even with more complex games, you're typically looking at like 2, 3, 4 players. Some have play 5, but it's rare to really get beyond that. There are some decent 6-player games, but that wouldn't be considered party games. But traditionally, if you're going to go past about 4 people, you're usually in party game territory, especially if you're not playing with quote-unquote board gamers, like heavy-er board gamers.
Okay, so what are some good examples of a party game, just to give people an idea of what they're looking for when trying to purchase one or maybe start with one?
Sure. Well, one big example that I would imagine most people would know, because it's been in Target for a while and Walmart and everywhere else, is Codenames.
Oh, such a good one. Yes. I have played that one.
Right?
And there's 17 different versions of it, it seems.
There are a ton of different versions of it, yes. So so Codenames is one. Even things like Telestrations, Taboo. We're kind of getting into older party games at this point. A lot of trivia games. Trivial Pursuit is a party game.
That's a good one.
Some more modern ones that we've played is So Clover.
That is one of my favorite games.
It is wonderful. It is so good. and Just One is another example of one that is just an enormous amount of fun. And I'm sure we will do several episodes about kind of our favorite party games as we get into those. But those are some kind of broader examples of what I would usually define as party games.
I think what I would say about party games is that I think they're a really great way to, like, if you're the first person in your group of friends or your family to get into board games as a hobby, I think these are great games to help get your friends and family involved in, because they're easy, they're fun to play.
Yes.
And again, just kind of a great introduction.
Exactly. And because most of them are family weight type games, Grandma will often play a party game. So if you have larger family get-togethers, it's not just mom and dad and, you know, a kid and grandma. Maybe it's mom and dad and aunt and uncle and 2 kids and grandma and grandpa, and they're all together. And what do you want to play?
It's the whole reunion.
Exactly, exactly. So, that's party games. Past gateway games, like, what are you gatewaying into is probably a good question. And I think that is a good place to stop, because I think that is a good topic for next time, is what lies beyond the gate in a gateway game.
Definitely.
So what is that next step? What are we gatewaying into? Because I think a lot of people may not really understand, like, what else is after Ticket to Ride or Catan. You know?
Yeah, we've kind of hit the end of my realm of knowledge of board games. But again, that's kind of why I'm here. Yeah. Here to ask a lot of those questions that you guys as listeners might have as well.
Exactly. And we're happy to have you. I'm happy to have you. And we're happy to have you guys. So hopefully you'll join us next time. We'll talk about what lies beyond the gateway. In the meantime, how can people get a hold of us?
They can get a hold of us a couple of different ways. You can always subscribe to our website at themeeplepodcast.com. You can reach us on almost every social media at The Meeple Podcast.
Mm-hmm. And then you can also email us at themeeplepodcast@gmail.com. Those are probably going to be the best way to reach us. We'd love to hear from you. Instagram, email, what have you. We're only here because you're listening. Well, at least we assume you're listening. So, all right. Well, we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.